This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs.
Hey, hey, hey.
They call me Hal. They call me Stacy. They call me Her. They call me Jane.
Hey everybody, this is episode number 39 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
Ladies, have you seen the first official photo from the Ghostbusters reboot?
Mm-hmm. No.
Okay. Chris and I saw it. I shared it on Twitter. And the first thing that crossed Chris's mind is that we should cosplay it.
Yep.
What is it a picture of?
Well, it's the four ladies. It's a reboot of the Ghostbusters with an all-female cast. So it's Kate McKinnon, Kristen Wiig, Melissa McCarthy, and Leslie Jones. And it's basically them all in their Ghostbusters gear. They're in, like, a really scary-looking hotel with, like, a green, eerie glow. And they're looking really badass. And they've got their cannons. I don't know what the official name is, but they have that cannon that's, like, strapped to their back.
Don't cross the streams.
There you go. But they just look really badass. And when I showed Chris that picture, she was like, we should cosplay this. Like, there's four of them and four of us. And I was like, it's a nice, simple, easy cosplay to get into. And maybe we could, like, get the dogs involved and just be, we will go to a con and be the four magic Ghostbusters.
Sweet.
I think that'd be awesome. Woman of Excellence this week was actually a recommendation that we received through email from our friend Jeffrey. And Jeffrey said, I would like to nominate Angela Chandler. She is a judge from the southeastern region of California and does an outstanding job as a community leader. She organizes social meetups, judge education, and judge coordination in the Los Angeles area with one of the strongest community-minded approaches I've ever seen in the program. She's also been recognized in the Exemplar program for these things, and she is a friendly and positive force in the community. So keep up the good work, Angela. Hot topics this week. We're going to go ahead. Oh, before we do that, we have to give a shout out. We have to do this. Our friend and friend of the show, Patrick Sullivan, announced this week that he is going to be stepping down from doing coverage for Star City Games. He received a salary position with Activision, and that's going to be his gig from now on. And he said that he might do coverage intermittently, but that's going to be his full-time job, and the community is going to miss him terribly. Like I said, he's been a big supporter of the show and our mission, and he's just an all-around great guy, and we're very sad to see him go.
I will miss him a lot.
Yeah, so pour one out for P. Sully.
Yeah.
He actually helped me last night. I was having what I like to call my internet fame problems. I was having some anxiety about something, and I don't really have many people I can talk to about that, like, without sounding full of myself. And Patrick's one of those people that I know can relate to things I'm going through, and he understands. And so he talked me off the ledge last night, and he's just a really good guy in every sense of the word. Now we can move on to the hot topics. The first thing we're going to talk about is the World Magic Cup. I don't know if you guys got to watch any of the coverage because of the time zones, but it really did look like a good time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
One of the things that I look forward to every year is the Spirit Awards. Like, I like seeing how everybody comes dressed up for the event. And the standouts this year, I want to talk about the Dominican Republic. And they showed up in the garb of the local coconut vendors. And they went on. That's what they said. That's what it said in the article. And they explained how the straw hat is made from the coconut tree, which protects them from the sun. And how the cloth belts are because people are often too poor to own belts. So they make their own belts. And the scarf is there to clean the sweat from standing in the sun selling coconuts, and I thought they looked great. Panama showed up with these dirty devil masks. They were these massive, like, dragon masks, and they were really, really cool. They had to sit with them on their laps for the whole 12-hour plane ride, which had to suck. But that was actually their gift to Wizards as a token of appreciation for making the game that they love. Scotland showed up in kilts, of course. And their kilts had the patterns of, like, their family on them. Like, their family, their tartan patterns was for their families and everything like that. And they were really cool. And I also want to give a shout out to Mexico. I don't know if you saw this, but Mexico showed up with these giant sombreros and also fake mustaches. So if you see them, they are just adorable. And I was just like, I want to hug you all. Like, you're just the best. But the standout event for me at the World Magic Cup is what they call the Unified Standard, which is where the team basically is given a binder. of four copies of every standard legal card, and somehow they have to come up with three different decks, and they can only use four copies of the card between them. So for example, if you have four copies of Hang Your Back Walker, you know, one person can use four of them, or like one person can use two, another person can use two, and the third person can't use any. And it's interesting to see what these people came up with. Now, I couldn't help but wonder, in an alternate universe, let's say that we were representing Team USA. I know. And we were given this pool of cards. What on earth would we build?
This was really tough. I was thinking about it, and at first I was going through a lot of the decks and thinking like, oh, Rally and Antarka Red and Esper Dragons and Red Green Eldrazi don't have a whole lot of card overlap. And then I looked at the mana bases and I was like, oh wait, they're all running the same 12 fetch lands. Like, how do you divide those up? So I decided to try to find the decks with like the least parasitic mana bases. So Abzan, Jeskai, Rally, those decks all seem to have like the same, a lot of the same fetch lands, like Flooded Strands and Wooded Foothills. So the three decks that I would probably build, two of them for sure, I think, would be Antarka Red and Esper. And those seem pretty popular just because, like I said, they don't have a lot of overlap card-wise, and also you can build them in such a way that the mana bases have no overlap at all. Plus, they're both among the strongest decks in the format, so those are really good candidates. I struggled a little bit coming up with the third deck. I thought about Temur initially, because you get Yavimaya Coasts and Frontier Bivouacs and Lumbering Falls. You even get the leftover Cinderglades that Antarka Red didn't need, because they only used two. But I've had some friends who have played Temur just like at the FNM level and online a little bit, and it hasn't been super consistent. So I'm not really sure about it. I also thought of potentially like a Black-Red Dragons kind of deck with Kolaghan's Commands and Kolaghan and Thunderbreak Regent. I think that could be pretty good. So yeah, probably like an aggro deck, a mid-range deck, and a control deck is probably a great way to round everything out.
Now, I'm confused about something, because each of these teams has four people on them, but you have to build three decks. So does that mean that one person doesn't play in this event?
I think so. I think there's one person just sort of overseeing everything.
Okay, so I'm going to be the overseer, just because. So if it came down to you three, which decks would you each take? Like, which of you would take the aggro deck, which of you would take the control deck?
Give Katie Esper.
Okay. Chris, would you play Antarka?
Sure, why not?
Okay, and then Hallie, you would play...
I would play the mid-range deck. I play a lot of mid-range decks.
Yeah. Okay. I seem to recall Team USA being on Temur and it not going very well. Mm. And they were getting some crap for it on Twitter. People were like, Temur? Really? And I've actually been seeing a lot of this Temur Black. I faced that online the other day, and I've decided that I'm going to call Temur Black LGB Temur. Because it's basically running every color of the rainbow anyway, so it's like, why don't I have a catchy name with it, you know?
Yeah, Kibler played it at the Invitational, and it seemed pretty good in the deck tech that he did. Like, it seemed pretty strong, and I think Tassiger is kind of what it needs.
Yeah. Well, Italy ended up winning the World Cup, so grats to them. Andrea Mengucci, also a friend of the show. He's freaking adorable with his flawless smile and his little glasses. God bless him. So speaking of the Invitational, so Abzan Aggro ended up winning this. I told you about this, Hallie. Four snapping Gnarlid in the main.
Mm-hmm.
Girl.
I tried snapping Gnarlid for a little while. It ranged from... It was a pretty wide range. There were some situations where it was amazing, like when my opponent would play a turn three Anafenza, and then I would untap, play a fetch land, fetch Dramico's Command, have them fight, and attack for five. Like, that was always really good. And then there were some situations where I would just draw it really late and it would do absolutely nothing. So I'm now on the Heir of the Wilds plan, but I think snapping Gnarlid is still fine in a lot of situations, just maybe not great in the late game.
Yeah, I was watching the finals between Caleb and Vidianto, and I sent you a message, and I was like, Hallie, has it come to this? You were like, what? I'm like, snapping Gnarlid in the main, four, and you're like, hey, it's not that bad. So
I didn't play four, I played three.
Oh, I know, Caleb was playing four, and that's why I was like, is this what you guys are doing now? Like, really? I also wanted to talk to you about some other tech in Abzan. Four Pitiless Horde in the sideboard.
Hey.
I'm assuming that's for control decks?
I don't know. I mean, it was. I played a lot of it in Dragons of Darkir Limited. I haven't really seen much of it outside of that.
So for those listening at home, it's 2 and a black, and it's an Orc Berserker, 5/3, 5 power. At the beginning of your upkeep, you lose 2 life, and you can dash it for 2 and a black. So I'm thinking, you know, because a lot of Esper's removal is sorcery speed, you know, you, well, it has some sacrifice effects, but, you know, because it's not on the board, you can't board wipe it. And I know Abzan can be weak to Languish. Mm. You know, I think it's strong to just sort of dash it, and then you're not having to pay the life loss either.
Yeah, that makes sense because, you know, as I said when this format started, like, there is not a lot of instant speed removal to go around, and I think it probably serves a good role in that case.
Yeah. How do you feel about Painful Truth? Because that is the card that everybody is talking about, and Caleb ran 2 in a sideboard. Like, are you on board with that?
I think it's fine. I don't know that I would necessarily play it in Abzan, just because my whole game plan is just to build up board presence, and so I don't really want to be, you know, dirtling around a lot. I want to be sort of, like, affecting the board at all times. I know Jerry Thompson wrote an article about playing Painful Truths in more of, like a Jeskai tokens build. And I think it can be very good if you're looking to be more controlling, but that's not really Abzan's role right now.
Mm-hmm. So top 8 consisted of Abzan Aggro, Esper Dragons, 4-color Rally, Red Black Dragons, Jeskai Black, hey girl, 5-color Bring to Light, ooh, okay, Esper Midrange. Now I want to talk about this Esper Midrange deck. 3 Archangel of Tithes, 4 Knight of the White Orchid, 4 Wasteland Strangler. That is the Eldrazi where you can put a card from exile into the graveyard and give a creature -3/-3.
Yep.
Okay. 4 copies of Transgress the Mind in the main deck.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, this came in 7th place with the Invitational. This is spicy.
I don't actually.
Would you guys play this?
Yes.
You would play this?
Oh, yeah.
What about this appeals to you?
Just the fact that it's using just some, like, really, like, underrated, I guess, cards. Like, Wasteland Strangler, he seems like a super baller. Archangel of Tides, like, I'm all about it. And, like, I was just looking over the list today, and I was just like, you know, Knight of the White Orchid doesn't get a lot of love either. But Chris has been running it, his White Weenie deck, and it's, like, wrecking everyone's face off. So I am, like, totally ready. Like, I'm like, okay, if I was going to build another deck right now, I'd probably build that one just for funsies.
I lost to this deck.
You did?
At one of those PTQs where I lost 1 round in the main and then lost my quarters match. This was one of the decks I lost to, and he wasn't running any blue, but it looks like the only blue in this deck is in the sideboard. And he's basically just running this same exact deck with no blue. And it definitely, I think it should be a good matchup for a ramp deck, but it just did not go well. Archangel of Tithes turns out is a pretty good card.
I have to keep reminding myself that, you know, when these processor cards, these cards where you can take something from exile and put it in the graveyard, I have to keep reminding myself that cards like Silk Wrap and Suspension Field, you can take those cards from exile and use those.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I lost to that too.
I keep forgetting that, like, I for some reason I like to think of it as being like separate exile zones, but in reality there's just exile. Mm-hmm. And even though you have the Silk Wrap on the board with the Silk Wrap on top of what you're exiling, you know, that's still part of the exile zone, and that's a really cool combo. Like, I love seeing people use that. Jeff Hoogland actually did very well. 15th place with a black-white control list, 4 Seeker of the Way, 3 Gideon, 3 Obnixilus, 2 Sorin, and then 3 Secure of the Waste and a whole bunch of black-white kill spells.
I love Sorin. I miss playing Sorin.
I remember when the Abzan decks were like, you know, that was like a mainstay in those decks, and now they just don't fuck with it.
Yeah, I want to fuck with it. I want to play some Sorin.
Oh my. The thing I found really interesting was it seemed like the meta between the Open and the Invitational was quite different. There were 8 copies of Abzan Aggro in the top 32 of the Open, and not nearly as many in the Invitational. And also, too, in terms of the Open, Esper Dragons was nowhere to be found in the top 32, which I thought was really, really curious. And Brian Brown to win won the Open.
Yay.
I felt so bad for BBD because he had been wanting to win an Open for so long, and he won one just as all the leaks were coming in. So BBD tweets, and he's like, hey, guys, I finally won an Open. And everybody was like, that's nice, girl, oath leaks. And poor BBD's like, okay, I'll just... Poor guy. Chris and Katie, have you guys been practicing for Oakland at all? It's coming up soon. Getting your standard fill-in?
Sort of. I don't know. I didn't do so well last FNM, but, like, I don't know. Like, I just didn't give a shit because we were just, like, hanging out and trying to help our other friends with their decks. So it gave me some more perspective on things I wanted to change for, like, my sideboard. I'm considering changing out some spells, possibly, in the main deck. But at this point, I think I'm going to bring Thopters because it's fun to play and it's just a cool deck. And I really, really like it. So that's what I'm going to roll with.
Do you plan on practicing at all, or do you plan on just kind of focusing on Modern until then?
No. When I go back to FNM, I'll probably play. Like, I can't do it this week, but next week I'll probably practice with friends if I have time. But, like, I don't have it online, so I'll probably just have to sneak it in here and there. But at the end of the day, let's be real, I'm going for the playmat.
Did you see the one from Australia that's like I think it's the Oromancer?
Yes, I did see it.
Have you already pre-ordered that?
No, but I'm sure I could have my sources get it to me if I wanted to.
You know how we were collecting listener questions from all over the globe? She's collecting, like, she's got the map with, like, the push pins, and she's like, okay, I've got my Brazil playmat, I've got my Australia playmat, I've got my Ethiopian playmat. It's like, oh, God, just... out of control.
It's so good. That San Paulo playmat is amazing because it's the Remand art.
Oh, you like Remand?
Hell yeah, I do. It's so beautiful. I don't even want to use it because I'm just like, oh, it's so nice.
You know, if I had a Remand playmat and I was actually playing Remand, I would just point to the mat. I would be like I would cast the Remand and then I would just point and be like, this effect, you need to do what this mat does. Just... I used to do that with my, I had a Sign in Blood playmat that was a Ouija board, and it had, like, a yes on the left and a no on the right, and, like, if I was going to kill your shit, I would always, like, cast the spell and then, like, lay the card on the no and be like, no. And then if, like, I didn't have anything for what you were doing, I would just sort of lay my hand on the yes, like, I will allow it.
That's awesome. And,
yeah.
I've got a die that has, like, all of these different faces on it, on each side, and they're all in different moods, so there's, like, one guy who's, like, winking, and then another one is, like, an extreme frowny face. And sometimes, like, if it's somebody I know, not just that random times, but sometimes I'll just kind of put it out there, and it's, like, frowny face, like, when I'm really losing, and I'm like, this is how I feel. But I don't want to make my face do that, so you can just look at the die.
Have you ever had a moment where, like, things are turning around, so, like, you have, like, the frowny face, and then you get your opponent in the corner, I would just look at them and, like, smile, and then flip the die.
Yes. And sometimes it goes from frowny face, and then there's a guy with just a straight face, when I'm like, I'm hopeful that I could make a comeback. And then it slowly flips to the guy that has, like, just a nice smile, like, I'm coming for you. And then when it's, like, winning time, then you flip it to, like, the extreme smiley face guy.
Yeah. Oh, man. There are so many ways that could be used for, like, maximum pettiness.
Yeah. That's why I don't use it with strangers very often.
Right.
But I think we should get Chris a t-shirt that just says, like, let's be real, I'm going for the playmat.
I would definitely support this.
Maybe when we get our playmats made, that could be one of the logos or one of the slogans we have on them.
Yes, I would approve. So.
Have you been playing Standard at all, Katie? Are you ready for Oakland?
I am not ready yet.
Not ready.
I just finished up with finals and stuff, so I have not had a lot of time for Magic, except for when I'm procrastinating. It's always a good procrastination tool, but here in the next couple weeks, I will definitely be trying to figure out my plan. I have no idea what deck I'm going to play, so should probably figure that out at some point. But that's what the Testing House boat is for.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I think I know what I'm going to play. I've been having a lot of fun playing Casper Dragons.
what was that? Could you say that one again?
It's really dry in here. You know, I mean, it's a Casper Dragons.
Oh, sounds like you got a nasty cough there.
I have a nasty case of blue.
It's the best case.
I've been playing blue spells. I've been playing Esper Dragons. I do have Esper Dragons built on Magic Online. I took it into a league and went 5-0.
Casually.
Yay. in my first league with Esper Dragons, and I feel really, really good about it. I feel like I have really good matchups. I admit that I haven't really played any Atarka red with it, and I'm pretty sure it's abysmal, but we'll see. But I feel good about Dark Jeskai, even though they're very long, grindy games. I feel good about Abzan. I feel good about Mardu. I feel good about Ramp. I just feel really, really good about the deck. Like, Ojutai is so strong, and especially if you have, like, the counter spells and even the sacrifice effects where you have a dragon in play, you just feel so ahead of the curve. And I've been using Shuhei Nakamura's list from GP Kobe, and I really, really like it. So I'm about 75% sure that I will be playing Esper Dragons at GP Oakland.
Awesome.
Yeah, I've been having a lot of fun with it. Like, you know, just some of the... And Jace, even Jace is fun, where it's just like, oof, this is so cool. It's like, you know, you guys, I should have listened to you guys sooner.
It's like Jace is always fun.
All the Jaces are fun to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are. The only thing that's kind of strange to me is that I've noticed that Dark Jeskai really likes to board in Infinite Obliteration against me because they can't really deal with Ojutai. So I'm just like, what? You're supposed to use that for ramp decks. What do you... Ooh. And then I had one guy use it twice against me. So he took my Ojutai and then my Monastery Mentors. And I was like, I boarded out my Silumgars, and how am I going to win this? And so ultimately, I had to win. I won with 30 seconds left on the clock. I had Jace's ultimate, and then I had to awaken an island. Shit got real. And through some miracle of God, I won, and he was not happy about that. But it's a lot of fun. I'm really enjoying being on the control side of things.
Nice.
And Painful Truths is so good. Like, just draw all the cards. I love it.
Okay. I've gone mad with power.
I have. It's your fault. You know, I was surrounded by all you blue mages, and this is your...
It was bound to happen sometime.
It was bound to happen.
I'm glad it was now.
So one thing I couldn't help but notice when I was watching coverage of the Invitational and the World Magic Cup is the young men that were dressed very, very casually for these types of events. And I know I've talked about this before, and I couldn't help but feel like, if you're going to an event like this, if you're going to an event that you have to qualify for, that's on camera, and you're representing yourself, and possibly representing your country, why are you wearing sweatpants? Like, why are you wearing basketball shorts? And I just can't help but feel like there should be a dress code for a certain tier of events. You know, I think GPs are fine. I think PPTQs are fine. I think IQs are fine. I think even Opens are fine. But I think if you're going to something, you know, big, like the Pro Tour, the World Magic Cup, an Invitational, I think you should have to step it up a little bit. And I did some digging online. I actually found the dress code for the chess circuit. And it's not terribly restrictive. Like, I'm looking at what it says you can wear, and you can still wear jeans. They just have to be nice jeans. And, you know, you can wear, you know, shoes or sneakers, as long as they're nice shoes. You can wear, you know, a nice shirt. You know, am I alone here? Like, what do you guys think? Is that asking too much?
No. I think that, you know, when you do get to a certain level of things, that you should look nicer. And maybe it's just me, because I used to wear, like, a suit to work for 7 years, so I was like, this is just normal. But, like, if I was going to be representing the United States, or, you know, I was going to go to, like, a higher-level tournament like that, I'd probably wear dress pants, some comfortable shoes, and, like, a black sweater. Like, it'd probably be all dark colors, which is still my jam, but I'd still be comfortable and still look nice, and, you know, but I wouldn't, like, go rolling in there with a, a halter top, titties all askew, and, like, you know, just fucking ripped up everything, and just be like, hey guys, I'm here to win it. You're like, you're here to do something. That's for sure. So, I don't know. Like, that's just me. So, me, like, I don't know. A lot of those guys end up wearing, like, running shoes and, like, too tight jeans, and I guess if that's their jam, that's fine, but as long as you're not looking like you just crawled out of bed, I guess you're all right.
I'm still just a titties
hoss. Well, I'm just saying, you know, just be like, everything is just out in the open. Like,
yeah.
Like if I saw a girl show up, I'd be like, I'm so sorry, but you gotta put the girls away, you know?
If I knew that we could get away with it, I would totally call the episode Titties All Is. But there's no way it would ever fly. Like, Stibbs would be like, no. Hallie and Katie, what do you think about this? Would you support a dress code at certain levels?
I feel like I can see it from both sides. Like, there are, you know, there are times when I go to a Magic tournament and I'm like, I just want to be comfy. And, you know, I just want to wear, like, my big baggy sweatshirt and play my games and not freeze because the venues are always cold. But then there's other times where, you know, it's like dress for success, you know. You go into a test or an interview and you look nice and you do better. And I don't know, I can kind of see both things. I wouldn't want, I guess if it wasn't too restrictive, I think it'd be great. Like, I do think that our players that are representing, you know, all the different countries and things should look nice. But I wouldn't want it to be like a deterrent, like, you know, if people can't afford nice clothes or whatever the case may be. But I feel like if it wasn't too restrictive, I'd definitely be down for that.
Yeah, I agree with Katie. I think if you're going to be playing in a tournament for an entire day, you need to be wearing something comfortable. But I know, at least I personally just try to be comfortable, but also look nice at the same time. Like, I usually try to wear just like jeans and comfortable shoes and like a sweater or something. I wear layers just because sometimes you never know how warm or cold a convention center is going to be. So I guess those are my feelings on it. I'm also unsure about how you would enforce a dress code like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I was looking to, I mean, going back to the chess example, I'm actually looking at the guidelines, which I can certainly send you guys if you would like, but it does say at the bottom, a player not in proper dress code will not be allowed to play until she or he complies with the FIDE dress code. Mm-hmm. So coming from, like, a judge's point of view, you know, yeah, I mean, like, would you, like, I can see that being kind of, I mean, it does give you some guidelines here as to what's not acceptable. So, like, for example, you can't show up in flip-flops, profanity and nude pictures printed on shirts. You know, these are really obvious examples, but I would be kind of concerned that, like, maybe there are some things that are, like, subjective where you're like, you know, this judge thinks you look kind of schlubby, but this one thinks you look just fine. And it's like, how would you, you know, if somebody's not obviously disheveled, how would that shake down?
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I think it's definitely a potential, though. I mean, especially for, like, the Pro Tour and stuff. You know, a lot of the Channel Fireball guys have those, like, nice black button-up shirts and look sharp. And that's definitely, like, you know, just a nice thing to see when people really want to, you know, represent themselves well.
Well, it's also about representing the game, too. And at the top of this chess thing, it says, you know, objective, it is important to promote a good and positive image of chess. Attire worn should be in good taste and appropriate to such a prestigious event. And I think that's why it sort of bothers me so much. Like, I'll never forget Jared Betcher, rest in peace, when he was named Rookie of the Year at that Pro Tour. I think it was Pro Tour M14. And, like, he's sitting in this chair, and, like, he's really comfortable. Like, he's kind of slouching. He's got his leg crossed, and he's in these really, like, dingy shorts and that fucking Pokemon hat. And, like, I can see up his shorts. And I'm just like, you are the Rookie of the Year. You are at the Pro Tour. I kept thinking of that scene from Sex and the City. Go with me on this. Have any of you ever watched Sex and the City?
Yes.
Okay.
Regrettably.
Remember when Carrie got the job at Vogue?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the one guy was, like, trying to sexually harass her, and she's like, what are you doing? This is Vogue. You know, just sort of, you're not just at any old event. You're at the Pro Tour. Like, this isn't, you know, step it up, step your cookie up a little bit. You're at the Pro Tour. And, you know, to see somebody just sort of show up and be schlubby and be like, yeah, I'm Rookie of the Year. Like, to me, it seems almost disrespectful. Like, this is such a great event. And anybody, you know, you're at an event that not anybody can qualify for. And I feel that you should, you know, you should respect that by putting a little more thought into your appearance. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
So something else that was a hot topic were, so the World Magic Cup happened, the Invitational happened, and just as the Invitational was winding down, Twitter exploded. There was an IMG, is it Imgur? I-M-G-U-R?
Imgur.
Imgur, thank you. There was an Imgur link going around Twitter that featured about a dozen Oath of the Gatewatch cards, some cards from Dual Decks Blessed Cursed, and social media went crazy. Did you guys happen to look at these?
I did.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
I saw.
You saw. And Katie, I think you avoided them,
right? Avoiding them like the plague.
You're avoiding them. All right. We'll certainly respect that. I have to say, it got everybody talking. I was certainly excited about certain cards. I will keep it very general for those of you who are avoiding the spoilers. The one card I was really excited about is called Kozilek Return. I will say that it is very good for red-green ramp decks. Like, I really do feel like red-green is going to be the color for ramp when Oath comes out. Also, they did confirm that Kozilek was real on the broadcast for World Magic Cup. There was also a Sphinx that was spoiled, which I think is going to be a great finisher for control decks. So if you're playing a blue control deck and you're just playing any control deck and you're not really on board with dragons, the Sphinx is a really nice option for you. And I was also really excited about Kalitas. And Kalitas is a vampire that has been in the story of Zendikar since the first go-round of Zendikar. And he comes back this time and he has an Eldrazi stuck to his head. And it looks really, really creepy. And he's got, like, these bone plates that are, like, popping out of his chest. And there's, like, blood streaks. And I'm really curious about where they're going to go with this character. Because I did some reading today, and I found out that all the vampires on Zendikar, nobody really knows how they got there. Apparently, when Ulamog broke free, apparently, when Ulamog first came to the plane, they came along with him. And the vampires don't really remember anything before that. And, like, one cast of vampires wanted to work with the Eldrazi, and then Drana's crew did not. And I just think there's a lot of Vorthos potential there, so I'm really excited to see what they do with that character. But more than that, there was a lot of talk about the feelings that come from a leak like this and how, you know, it can be bad for the community and it can be bad for content creators. You know, what do you guys think about this? Like, you know, was this as bad for the game as people thought it was?
I think it is pretty bad. I mean, just judging by the response to Kozilek being spoiled at the World Magic Cup, nobody really cared, because Kozilek had been spoiled weeks before, and we all knew about Wastes, we all knew about the Diamond Mana symbol. People have been speculating about the Diamond Mana symbol for weeks now, so it wasn't really the big reveal that Wizards wanted it to be, and I think that's unfortunate. I read the article that Trick Jarrett wrote, and it really is true that a lot of work goes into orchestrating this preview season, and when someone decides to leak the cards early, a lot of people's work goes to waste.
Yeah, I was definitely sad about, I mean, obviously I'm trying to avoid them, but it's like, you know, I said earlier, it's like getting your presents opened before Christmas time. It's just not the same. It doesn't have the same feeling, and I guess it's cool for the first time, but there's not a ton to look forward to after that. There's no build up and excitement, and I don't know, I just think it's really, really unfortunate.
It is. I'm weird though in that I'm never surprised by like anything. Like, for example, all my Christmas presents, I know what all of them are.
Are they all playmats?
They are not. A lot of okay. It was makeup. But it's like, Nick can never surprise me. My family can never surprise me. So in and of itself, the leaks for me, I'm kind of like, oh, those are those. That's cool. Next, you know, I'm just like, I'll wait to play with them, whatever. Like, it doesn't mean that much to me personally, but I feel bad for the people that, you know, spent time and energy, you know, putting effort into the story and, you know, designing these cards and everything else to be like, wow, you know, I did this, I'm so excited, you know, I'm so glad to be a part of this. You know, you may have put in all this time away from your family, your friends, doing other things to make this a really big deal and something that you're really proud of, to have someone else come and, like, just steal your thunder and be like, haha, like, we've taken care of this, all your hard work means nothing now. And so for those people, I definitely, you know, feel bad for the Wizards employees, the artists, you know, whose art it is. You know, I know there was some discussion about, like, artist prints and whether or not they could sell them after the spoiler leaked and everything. But I think that for, like, content creators, it could be both a good and a bad thing. I guess it depends on what kind of content you're creating. Do you really want, you know, to talk about, you know, all the spoilers on your show or on your blog or whatever it is. But it's also bad for maybe people that they wanted to select to be like, oh, hey, insert podcast here or insert blog here. We'd like you to spoil this for XYZ reason. And it feels like for those people, they're getting like a special kind of recognition by Wizards saying, you can do this for us. And I just feel bad for anyone that might have missed out on something like that.
Yeah. The one thing I related to, Trick Jarrett wrote a post today, which I thought was pretty sincere, and he was sort of talking about what it's like from the inside to sort of see your work be released like this. And the one thing that I related to the most was when he was talking about the colorless mana symbol, because I saw so much discussion happening in my Twitter feed that I didn't really understand, because to me, the mechanic seems really, really simple and really easy to understand. But when Trick, you know, puts it out like this, and he's like, you know, we had a plan to, you know, tell the story of Kozilek. Then we were going to reveal Kozilek at the World Magic Cup and then follow it up with, oh, hey, Kozilek has this new mana symbol. While we're here, we will tell you what it means. And because Kozilek and Waste came out first, they were leaked with no explanation. You know, I've been seeing this discussion happen over the past 2 weeks that's still going on of, well, what happens to Sol Ring? And what happens with this? And what if I play a Hedron Archive? And you know, for the educational purpose, I really feel like the rollout would have been better because maybe people would have understood the mechanic as much, and that way we wouldn't have seen so much confusion. And I even just seeing the Twitter feed, like seeing the official Magic Twitter feed, I'm friends with Trick on Facebook, and he said something to the effect of, like, he answered like 300 questions just on Twitter of people like, I don't know what this means, they're having a meltdown. And that's got to be frustrating, because that's not how you want people to learn about a new mechanic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And talk about frustrating, I mean, another thing that just occurred to me is, you know, the people on the creative team at Magic have been working so hard to double down on story, as they say, and have these episodic Uncharted Realms stories come out every week that will transition us from one set to another. And it must be really, disappointing for the people who were looking forward to the next week's story, where they would reveal that Kozilek is on the plane. And, you know, for people who are Vorthoses and who care about that, it's like you told them the end of the movie before it happened.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have to say that one thing I didn't care for, and I really didn't see this coming from Wizard's side, but there were a couple people that I felt were getting on their high horse. There were a couple people who were aiming their anger at us, the people that were looking at the leaks and the people that were enjoying the leaks. And there were even some people on social media that went so far as to say, if you're looking at these leaks, you must not love Magic. And I was like, nope, no. I was like, you can go ahead and miss me with that. I was like, I think that's really uncalled for. I think if you're going to have any sort of anger, you should save it for the people that are doing the leaking. I think to sort of turn that on us, you know, and say that if you do this, then X. I was like, that's a really stern accusation to make. And like I said, I didn't see anybody from Wizards doing that, but there were some people that really got on that horse and started pointing fingers at us. And it's like, you're part of the problem. And I'm like, what? And so I didn't really appreciate that. So I was like, you know, you can feel the way you want to feel, but when you start taking it out on the audience and saying that, you know, we're supposed to be better and we're supposed to, I was like, I'm not really listening to that.
One thing I did like in the article that Trick wrote was how he, at the end, kind of addressed that they would be taking, like, legal steps. Because I feel like there's sometimes this delusion in Magic, or, like, in Magic players, like, this isn't real life. But it is. Mm-hmm. This is entirely real life. Like, there was a story that I heard from a judge that was, like, one player threw a water bottle at a different player, and it was, like, a soft toss, but it was still, like, malicious intent. And then he got up to leave, and the judge was like, no, you have to stay here. And he was like, why? And he's like, because we're calling the cops because you assaulted that guy. And the guy was like, are you serious? And they're like, yes, this is real life, and you assaulted that person, and they're hurt now. So, yes, there is repercussion to that. And it's just, I don't know, I feel like people don't realize that this is real life, even though it's a game. So I am kind of glad that he pointed it out that, you know, this is, like, not an okay thing to do. They stole intellectual property. So I was just glad to see that addressed in the article.
I admit, I still can't help but wonder. So apparently it was a place called Game Site or Game Something through an Instagram account. I still can't help but wonder, how did they even get the cards? Like, was it like a dumpster thing? Like, I still can't help but wonder how they got their hands on almost over a dozen Magic cards. And I'm not saying that really matters, but that's just sort of what's kind of gnawing at me, where it's like, where did they, like, I know, I mean, I've been a part of two spoilers. I received a card when I was doing the deck tease, and I was part of a reveal when I was on MTG Potpourri, and there was so much security where, like, Stibbs emailed me and it was, like, encrypted and all this stuff, and I saw one card, and I know that's, you know, when a site gets that card, that's typically all that they get. So how did, like, I could understand that this site had been given a card and they blew the lid off of it too soon, but where did they get all these cards from? Like, that's what I can't help but wonder.
Mm-hmm. No idea.
Well, and Trick said, you know, it could have been something where someone that works there, you know, left the building with them, even though they have tight security. And I think that would hurt me even more, especially if I worked there, to be like, we put on lots of hard work and someone from here did do this, then I'd be like, just kind of like, we stole from ourselves? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, that feeling of betrayal. Mm-hmm. So. I can't believe people think that wizards wouldn't come for your ass. Like, even when the tweets were happening, like, I'm watching all the tweets happen. I was sitting in Evan Irwin's stream when it happened. You could kind of see that intermingled with all the tweets, where, like, you'd see a tweet, like, 9:50. This is so awesome! 5 exclamation points. 9:52. Someone's getting fired! 9:54. I can't wait to play with this card! 9:56. You're going down! And, like, you know, that was a consistent theme of this. It's like, on the one hand, we were really excited, but on the other hand, we knew that this game store, this game site was fuzzocked, and I don't think anyone had any doubt that Wizards was going to go after them, and they rightly they should. Mm-hmm. So, the last thing that we had on the docket today was Magic Online. Lee Sharp introduced a new thing for next year called the Year of Modern Flashbacks. And said that for 2016, typically they have some flashbacks kind of sprinkled throughout the year, but in 2016, they're going to have a different flashback format every week.
Awesome.
Yeah. And they're going to be basically starting at the beginning of Modern and moving forward. So this will start effective December 30th, and they're going to kick it off with 3 packs of 8th edition. And then the following week, it'll be 3 of Mirrodin. After that, 2 Mirrodin and a Darksteel. And by the end of it, by the end of the year, you will have played every set that's legal in Modern.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You sound really excited about this.
Yes.
Yeah, I am. I mean, I do a lot of drafting on Magic Online, and believe me, after 10 weeks of drafting Battle for Zendikar, I always want something new. I want something to do otherwise, whether it's cube or a new draft format or something. So having a different thing that I can do every week, especially when there are sets that I haven't drafted before, is really exciting. I just kind of hope that someone, whether it's Wizards or any of the other various content creators out there, will, you know, make some primers just so those of us who haven't drafted the sets before can have a little bit of guidance in terms of how to draft them.
Yeah, they also said that these are not going to be Phantom. That these are actually going to be real cards.
Nice.
Yeah, so I think it's good for streamers. And I think it's good to, you know, like you said, Hallie, it can be a little stale playing the same set over again. Mm-hmm. And I think it also gives content creators something to do, too, where if you have writer's block, write a guide on Darksteel, because I sure as hell don't know how to draft those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like, you get so used to drafting, like, I remember I drafted one of the, I think I drafted Rise of Eldrazi. And it was just so not what I was used to. And I was like, I'm not in Kansas anymore. And I could have really used like a really nice kind of idiot's guide to this because I had no idea what I was in for. So our listener question this week, we actually, for the first time, we don't have a proper question. I take that back. We have questions, but they're either things we don't have enough experience with to answer. Like, somebody sent us a question about Puka Trade. And as far as I know, I'm the only one here who uses the service.
I've used it a little bit.
A little bit. Okay, so we didn't really feel cut out to answer that. We get a lot of questions about teaching your SO how to play Magic, which we feel that we've covered quite a bit. There's not really a technique or a way to do it. You just kind of have to do it. So we really didn't feel like we could add anything to that discussion. So we're going to give you guys and girls a week to fill up our inbox with some new questions. You can send them to thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. They don't have to be about Magic. If you're dreading going home for the holidays and you aren't sure what to do, you can ask us about that. If school's bothering you and you need some help with that, or you just want to know, if you just want to know things about us, you can ask us anything you want to. But this week, I thought we would do something fun. I've been seeing this meme on Twitter where people have been posting a picture and saying, if you like this, I will tell you so many facts about me for every like that you give me. And as much as I hate it because it clutters up my feed, I figured it'd be fun for each of us to take turns and reveal 3 things about us that you may not know. So Hallie, why don't you kick us off and tell our listeners 3 things that they probably don't know about you?
Sure. I know a lot of you know me as someone from the Seattle scene. I talk about going to Seattle tournaments a lot. But my first random fact is that I'm originally from Long Island. I've just been suppressing my accent for a really long time. I went to college and did radio for 4 years, and so I've worked a lot on saying my vowels in a conventional way. But you still may hear me say things like forest occasionally. I was actually playtesting with a friend of mine from Vancouver, and I played a forest, and she started saying it because I was saying it so much, and she was like, "Oh God, it's forest, but I want to say forest now. This is so awkward." But yeah, so It's funny. I am a little self-conscious about my accent sometimes because my parents have very strong accents and I try not to sound like my parents. But I have to say, whenever I hear BDM doing commentary, you know, he's from New York. He grew up probably not far from where my dad grew up. And hearing his accent is always a little comforting to me. Like, okay, I can have a New York accent and still be awesome at commentary or whatever. So that's one random fact. My second random fact is that I've never eaten a hamburger.
What?
I have never eaten a hamburger. My mom decided to cut red meat out of her diet when she was in her early 20s in an effort to lose weight, and she lost a ton of weight. And so when I was born, she basically didn't have red meat in our house. We ate chicken and turkey and fish, and sometimes shellfish, but we never ate any beef or pork or other red meats. So I've never had a hamburger. I've had many turkey burgers and chicken burgers, and I enjoy them quite a bit. I've also been known to make black bean burgers, but I've never had an actual beef hamburger before.
Wow.
Yeah.
And black, that's a tongue twister. Black bean burger. Those are really tricky because sometimes if you go to restaurants, I feel like they is the word deliquesce or del? They just sort of collapse like after a while. Like they just sort of turn into puddles of black goo. So if you can make them well, they're really, really good. But more often than not, if you leave them alone for like 5 minutes, you just have like a puddle and two buns.
Yeah. I make mine with, so I use egg as a binding agent and I put at least a decent amount of breadcrumbs in them so they have like a form. So I'm actually pretty happy with my black bean burgers. Like the issue with making them at home sometimes is if you don't add enough egg, they kind of fall apart. Like you just get little pieces of bean everywhere. Like they get too flaky, but, yeah, they're a lot of fun to make and they're pretty quick and easy too. And my third, random fact, which viewers or listeners may not know about me, but I know I've told you guys about this. I am a really bad driver. We were talking on Twitter one time about which Spice Girl we would be if we were the Spice Girls. And I posted the clip from Spice World where Posh has to drive the bus and she's really bad at it. And I was just like, I would be Posh because I'm a bad driver. I have a driver's license. I got a driver's license when I was 17 on my second attempt. I failed my first attempt. But I voluntarily don't drive because I don't want to put myself or any other motorists in any unnecessary danger.
I have to add, before we move on to Katie, I know that she doesn't like to do this, but Hallie, and I'm not going to make her do it now, but if you ever get the chance, and if Hallie's ever feeling generous, you have to convince her to do an impression of her mother. It is to die for. And I hate putting her on the spot. I'm not going to make her do it now, but if you're ever at a GP, if you run into her at an open, and you're like, hey, I love the show, can you do some Mama Santo for me? Because it is everything. And that's all I'm going to say about that. So Katie, what's up your sleeve?
So my first fact is that I did competitive gymnastics for 11 years when I was growing up. And when I quit, I grew 5 inches in 3 months. Because my growth plates just were like, oh, okay, now it's time to grow? Finally. So between like 14 and 15, I was definitely like super awkward. Like my body was just like, okay, we're going to get way taller. And I went through a lot of pairs of pants and a lot of, like, my arms grew longer. Everything just kind of got a little bigger. So that's my first fact. And my second fact is that I had a really bad gap in my teeth when I was, like, in sixth grade. Like, really bad. Like, my brother would call me, like, Bucktooth Beaver and, like, you're like a buck-toothed deer, like all these animals.
And that's why you got into veterinary school?
No, that was not it. That did not make me want to deal with animals. And then I had braces for 2.5 years and then got better. And then my third fact is that I have played a lot of different instruments in my life. I played the French horn, trombone, mellophone, and piano. And I would like to say that I'm very good at all of those. And I still play the piano occasionally now.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
I feel like you've lived like five lifetimes. Like you were a gymnast, you're a you know, a successful musician, like you're a competent musician, and you're saving animals' lives, and you're a magic judge. Like, I feel like I've done nothing with my life.
I basically have like six hands, and they all live inside my shirt, and then when nobody's looking, they all come out, and I do all of these different things at once.
Katie the hands, Neil.
Yes.
Now I have, like, a hard act to follow now.
Yeah, you've got to beat a pianist, clarinetist, veterinarian, gymnast.
No, she's regular Paul McCartney. All right. All right, let's see. Okay. One fact about me that some people might not know is I did express before we went to Vegas that I was very terrified of flying. Now I'm a little better with it. I'm hoping that Oakland will be like riding a bike. However, when I was younger, what I wanted to be when I grew up, was a pilot, because I've always been very fascinated by flight, and I have like lots of dreams about flying and stuff like that. And when I was a kid, I was like totally obsessed with the movie Radio Flyer, and I just really wanted to like build a contraption like that and just like fly away and go on adventures and stuff. Another fact about me is I am adopted, and my biological aunt, her name is America. She has two kids. One of them, their name is National, and the other one's name is Anthem.
No way.
I'm not lying. I'm so not lying. Like, wow. Like the first time one of my other aunts was like, oh, you're a cousin National. I was like, wait a second. National? And she's like, yeah. I'm like, wait. Tia America has a son named National. For real? Yeah. With some Russian guy. And I was like, And then...
And that's a boy's name.
Yeah, that's his name.
Interesting.
Yeah, and then Anthem is a girl.
Wow. So when the mom calls them, like, up the stairs, she's like, National Anthem!
Like basically.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
I'm still surprised my grandparents named her America, but whatever. Maybe they were just like, we're Mexican and we're happy to be here, so that could be why.
I had a friend whose name was Dorothy Carolina, like her last name was Carolina, and her sister's name was Nebraska. So Nebraska Carolina.
Oh my Lord. That's kind of unfortunate.
I know. I go through that sometimes at work, like when we check in like these donors, I'm like, who the hell named them this? Like, really?
Oh, yeah, we had somebody at work the other day, one of my underlings, her name was Freedom something, and I'm like, girl. And then there was another one the other day, I swear to God, her first name was Fantasy. And we work in a bank, this feels kind of inappropriate, like... Like, good job, Fantasy. Like,
well, at least she's, you know, ready for, you know, possibly another job that she could have in the works. You know, she's got the name already. But yeah, I feel bad because there are several people that I've come into contact in real life whose name is Ronald McDonald, and I'm like, I'm very sorry to hear this. And then, since it is around the Christmassy time of year, I would also like to declare at this point that I have never... in my 32 years of life, seen the movie It's a Wonderful Life.
Get off this show.
I know.
Me neither.
Never seen it.
You, what?
I don't celebrate Christmas and I've seen that movie.
I know. I'm like horrible. It's like I've seen Fiddler on the Roof a million times, but no fucking It's a Wonderful Life. And it's my best friend's favorite movie, and I have never seen it.
Now, here's the fun thing. I'm Jewish, like, culturally, and I've never seen The Fiddler on the Roof.
I've seen it. I've seen it on Broadway.
I know. Hallie's got her G card.
I know,
card.
She's trumping
got her gold
you.
Star. I didn't earn mine.
Barely.
Oh, man. So I actually have a Christmas-related fun fact in you know, kind of like yours, Chris. Up until I was 21 years old, I've been 21 years old, I have not watched Frosty the Snowman, because up until 21, I would cry every single year.
Aww.
Yeah. Because I don't trust myself. So I can remember being a little kid, and it's specifically the part when Frosty melts. And they're playing that really sad, like, Frosty the Snowman. And I'm weeping, like, weeping copiously. And I was a gifted child, so I was really, really smart. And so that magician comes along and, like, brings Frosty back. And I was still crying. And I remember my mom going, Aaron, why are you crying? They brought Frosty back. It's not the same Frosty. It's magically resurrected Frosty. And I was really convinced that it wasn't the same Frosty and that I wanted no part of this Frosty. And so my mom would put it on every year because it would be on TV and we would watch the movies. And, you know, 7 years old, 8 years old, 9 years old, 10 years old, every year I would cry at the same part. And as I got older, I would tell myself, like, I'm 18. I'm going, I'm 18. It's not going to bother me. Oh, no. Frosty. So as soon as I hear that fucking jingle, all bets are off. And I was just like, why is this happening? And so at 21, I'll never forget, like the 21st year, I was like, I'm just not going to put myself through this anymore. Because, and even just thinking about it makes me kind of sad, where it's just like, poor Frosty. And I can't let go. So I have not watched it in about 10 years.
Aaron, have you ever seen or read The Snowman? It's probably better if you don't.
Okay.
It really is, because that's a sad time.
No, I can't do that. The other fun fact is that I am allergic to Pringles. Hmm. There is something in Pringles that makes my colon swell up. So the last time I had Pringles, I was 22, and I developed a case of colitis. Like, my colon was just on fire, and I couldn't bend myself at all. Like, going to sit down was painful. I had to be completely just straight. I think that's vertical.
Yeah.
So I had to go to the hospital for that. And yeah, there's something in Pringles that sets my colon on fire. So if I'm ever coming to visit you and you decide that you're going to be hospitable and put out snacks, don't include Pringles. Or if you don't want me to eat your snacks, just line your cupboards with Pringles, because that way you will ensure that I never touch them. And the last fun fact is that my last name is not actually Campbell. I chose Campbell as my, when I came out as being trans, and I was born Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, and when I decided that I was going to, you know, pursue my life as a woman full time, and that's how I choose to refer to that. I know some people like to say that you were always a woman, and that's a whole other story, but, you know, when I decided that I was going to live full time, I changed my name to Aaron, E-R-I-N, and with that I changed my last name. And so Campbell's not my real name. And part of the, one of the ways that I came up with the name Campbell is because when I was a little kid, I used to get called the Campbell Soup Kid. Because Campbell Soup used to have these really cute red-haired children in all of their commercials. And there was a group of stoners when I was in high school. And whenever they would see me, they would bow to me. So they would go, Campbell Soup, and like they'd get on their knees and they'd embarrass me because they knew that I was nerdy and awkward, and they would leave cans of soup outside of my locker. And so when I had to come up with a last name for myself, because I kind of wanted to reinvent myself, I was like, well, what's a name that is sort of generic, you know, because I'm going to be on the internet, but what's a name that has some sort of, you know, some pull to me? And so I thought, you know, cute little kid on the soup, Campbell. I'm good. That's cool. And like, you know, just sort of reclaiming it. I was like, I'll be Campbell. And so I became Aaron Campbell. So I know if we ever go out to eat, if we're ever hanging out at a GP and you see me flash my credit card, you will not see Aaron Campbell. And if you ever try to, like, you know, I'm going to go Google her. Good luck. Cause there's no Aaron Campbell here. So yeah. So Campbell's not my real name, my real last name. And that's just a little, my last fun fact for y'all. So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalcanSan. That's H-A-L-C-A-N-S-A-N. You can ask to join my Facebook group, Ladies on the Grind. We have over 50 members now.
Yay.
And it seems like it's been a really invaluable resource for people to test and coordinate travel and everything. So if you are looking for, you know, people to test and travel with, join the group. And my writing can always be found here on Gathering Magic.
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at meanmugger. That's M-E-A-N-M-U-G-G-E-R. Or you can find me by email at katie.neil14@gmail.com.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at T-E-H-K-R-I-Z. My Gmail is yotehkriz@gmail.com. That's Yot Chris. And my Snapchat, damn you, Katie, is kind of his cryptic command with K's.
Did she send it to you early?
Nope. I'm just No, I just got
She's
it.
Ready. She's just ready.
She's just in a permanent state of ready. And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at Original Estrus. It is OriginalEstrus. You can email me at estrus@elitistjerks.com. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket. We are also on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. iTunes, we are sitting at 39 reviews. So if you guys love the show, we would definitely appreciate it if you would take us to number 40, because that would lead to more exposure for us. And you can also email us at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.